This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Now listen to this.
You are listening to AWOL Radio on CKMS The Sound 100.3 FM in Waterloo.
In January, as the National Energy Board restarted its hearings into Kinder Morgan's controversial Trans Mountain Pipeline project in BC, demonstrations and protests took place across the land, including protest theater in Winnipeg, equipment blockades in Vancouver, and several public demos, like the one held in Waterloo. The demands were consistent: new rules for the National Energy Board process, which respects Indigenous rights and treaty agreements, and which takes climate change into account in the decision-making process. The Waterloo event, on January 24th, was organized by Divest Waterloo and the newly formed Chippewa Solidarity. The Waterloo demo opened with a local women's drum group sharing songs including the Water Song. The MC for the event was Steven Svensson, a professor at WLU who's been working with the Chippewas of the Thames as the battle against Line 9 heads to the Supreme Court. The speakers we will hear from in this podcast are Richard Walsh, the Green Party candidate in Waterloo, Louisette Lantang, a Waterloo resident and independent researcher, myself, Dan Keller, of Waterloo Region Against Line 9, and Amy Smoke, the president of the Aboriginal Students Association at the University of Waterloo. After the public demo, the day wrapped up with a viewing of One River, Many Relations at Wilfrid Laurier University, and a discussion on resisting tar sands developments while creating and supporting healthy communities. Check noline9wr.ca for more information about the Line 9 pipeline, and gofundme.com/chippewas to help with legal costs in the battle to stop Line 9.
I think it would be a good thing to pray for the water, so here's the water song.
Chimigwech to our singers. So my name's Steven Svensson. I do a lot of work with the Chippewas of the Thames First Nation on the Line 9 issue. What we're here today to talk about, I guess, is not only just the Line 9 issue, but the National Energy Board and the federal government has promised to suspend the pipeline applications that have gone through until the National Energy Board is fixed. The National Energy Board is broken. This is a problem for a lot of different reasons. And to kind of sketch that out for us and to tell us a little bit more about the broken National Energy Board, I'd like to ask Richard Walsh of the Green Party to step forward, please, and give us a few words.
Welcome, everyone. It's a grand afternoon because we are here as citizens to show our great displeasure, our great disappointment with the Trudeau government. A lot of talk, but a lot of action that is moving in the opposite direction of the promises and the suggestions throughout the recent election campaign that progressive action was forthcoming. Progressive action has yet to materialize, and this is a major problem. Let me explain to you, by the way, in case you're not familiar with who I am. I'm the local Green Party representative and was the Green candidate in Waterloo during this past election. Thank you. So the first issue that I want to bring to everyone's attention is, can somebody here please identify for the rest of us what is the basic issue that is at stake? Nice and loud. Climate change. Somebody tell us what is the connection between climate change and pipelines.
Emissions.
Tar sands extension and the connections between climate change and
floods and geological risk along the line that was ignored by the NEB.
Thank you, Louisette. So a major connection has to do with the fact that the National Energy Board, the composition of which is rather dubious, given that it was appointed by the Harper government, a major problem has to do with the nature not only of the composition of the board, but of what the board is going to be dealing with. And there still seems to be a basic lack of understanding on the part of the mainstream political parties, other than the Green Party, that the economy, which is resource-based largely, but not entirely in Canada, on the one hand, and the environmental consequences of any economy, on the other hand, have yet to be understood as part of a totality, as part of a great union or an integration. We've had lots of commentary during the election campaign, including from the present Prime Minister, of how, well, the environment and the economy, they're related, they're integrated, they fit together. Well, that's right, but we have yet to see any concrete, specific plans from Ottawa that reflect an understanding of what it is that Canada agreed to at COP21 in Paris. And that's very disappointing for all of us, and ought to be very disappointing for all Canadians. Unless we have a clear and direct plan that puts into action the dire necessity of Canada converting to a low-carbon economy as quickly as possible, we will have more demonstrations like this, and the perilous state of Canadian society will become even more apparent, and that will not make us happy. I'm wondering if somebody else can tell us what's the connection between what the NEB is supposed to be doing and climate change. Yes, please, Louisette.
Hello. My name is Louisette Lantang, and I was an NEB delegate for the Line 9 Phase 1 hearing, as well as the Line 9B hearing. I participated in the total public process of the line, going from Sarnia all the way to Montreal. In both hearings, Enbridge limited the scope of the assessment to only the area of their physical pumping station. Everything that was off-site was considered outside the scope. Every time we talked about the pipeline in between the two pumping stations, we were told we were fishing. we were outside the scope of the review, that it didn't have any merit whatsoever. Because the totality of the line right now is actually so badly designed because it was built in the 1970s without regard to future growth. Along the Grand River, for example, we only had one valve, and that valve was manual and it was underwater. The reason it was underwater was because in the 1970s, Waterloo was still principally farmland. We had growth. They paved over areas of the marine, and the storm water widened the channels of the Grand River so much so the shutoff valve that was manual was underwater during the spring thaw. I went to the National Energy Board the first hearing and the second hearing specifically on the issue of valves. And when the Line 9 leave to open was first rejected, the number one issue was valves. Now, throughout the process, Enbridge added 17 new valves. But that's really insufficient when you consider the fact that there are over 100 major waterways that only had six valves that only had six major waterways with two valves either side within 1 kilometer on each side of the river. According to the Navigable Waters Act, you need two valves beside every major water crossing. There's 104 major water crossings. They only had six. They added 17 more, and they approved it. Even to this day, that pipeline is not to code. It violates the Canadian Safety Standards Act. And we've secured municipal resolutions all across Ontario and Quebec, specifically to request proper testing of the line and the placement of those valves. And to date, they are not there. With climate change risks, we have trees, we have debris with the flooding and the increased rain. And those pipes are at risk. Even with all the valves closed, there's 12 kilometers of distance in between the two shutoff valves. So when it crosses a major waterway, all the valves are closed, it's still going to reverse flow 12 kilometers worth of fluid into the water bodies. Along the Grand River, we have Brant, Six Nations, Paris, all taking their water primarily from the Grand River. They only have 2 days' water supply. If there's a major accident along the Grand River that goes longer than 2 days, they can't take the water from the intake. We're screwed. Lake Erie is screwed. Six Nations and all those communities. And the liability risks increase for all of the affected municipalities when incidents of water contamination occurs. When Waterton happened, their insurance jumped up. So all of these communities, especially in Toronto, are at risk. Line 9 crosses over top Finch subway station. Now, $1 billion of insurance is not going to cover the property damage in downtown Toronto or in front of York University, where the pipeline also crosses. We have to be realistic. When I went to the National Energy Board, I asked Enbridge, how much is the pipe insured for? They refused to tell me. I think as taxpayers, when we are seeing our government approve these things, we deserve the right to know if it's properly insured, because our water supply is at stake, and water belongs to us, the commons. Okay? If we don't know what's going on, we deserve the right. Water is a public commodity, and all the data on this pipe should be too, because it's our communities affected, our properties affected, our water supplies affected. We're not unreasonable in wanting to know how we're going to be affected. Any time that we purchase a product, there has to be a disclosure of the risks of the use. But Line 9 and the media have failed to tell the Canadian public the full scope of the risks that exist for this line. And that violates law regarding economics. Consumer protection laws are being violated because Canadians don't know the truth. There's a lot of layers to this. First Nations communities have a right to know the truth. It's their land. It's their land. We all deserve a say. So I'd like to pass the mic on now to our organizer, and thank you very much for being here, folks.
Yeah, I thank you very much, Louise. It's always you always have so much insight for everyone. Really appreciate your words and all the research you do on behalf of everyone. Thank you so much. Let's give Louise a big round of applause, everybody. She's just awesome, awesome. And I can't really take credit for organizing this. I really need to hand and pass that over to Laura Hamilton and her crew at DeVest Waterloo. So thank you, Laura, for organizing this and raising, continuing to raise awareness. I wanted now to invite a guy who's been working really hard on the Line 9 issue for quite a number of years here. That's Dan Keller of No Line 9 Waterloo. Dan, if you wouldn't mind popping up and saying a few words, that'd be great.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming today. My name is Dan Keller. This is my son, Avery. as Steven said, I'm from the Waterloo Region Coalition Against Line 9. I'd like to thank the organizers for putting this on today and getting us all together to talk about fighting dangerous and irresponsible pipeline projects and taking action alongside Indigenous communities. The Canadian government, the NEB, and the fossil fuel industry have shown utter contempt for treaty responsibilities with Indigenous nations and a complete disregard for the scientific consensus on climate change. Honoring Canadian treaty responsibilities and fighting climate change can happen in our communities across Southern Ontario and throughout the whole country. Already through street protests, legal suits, petitions to government, divestment strategies, lengthy runs, regulatory appeals, and direct actions, Indigenous groups and others fighting for environmental justice have been challenging the power of the fossil fuel industry and the legitimacy of the government, which has been greedily approving destructive developments. Presently, the Chippewas of the Thames First Nation are poised to challenge the approval of Enbridge's Line 9 pipeline reversal project at the Supreme Court, as the NEB approved the project despite any meaningful consultation with or any consent of nearby Indigenous communities. The Chippewas need everyone's support, however you can give it, physical, spiritual, and financial. Presently, three brave land defenders await a Tuesday court date in Sarnia, where they face serious charges for physically shutting down the Line 9 near Omgenong First Nation Reserves in Chemical Valley. Vanessa, Sarah, and Stone need everyone's support, however you can give it, physical, spiritual, and financial. Blocking local pipeline projects such as the Line 9 reversal and Enbridge's newly proposed Line 10 expansion are necessary first steps in respecting the rights and honoring treaty responsibilities to Indigenous nations and frontline communities. Stopping the flows in Line 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 are paramount in ending destructive tar sands exploitation and fracked oil development, as it is this extremist oil that is being forced through these pipelines. Remember, Enbridge lies in the work that they do. In the Line 9 case, for instance, they were for years claiming they had only a dozen incidents on the Line 9 in its 40-year-old history, when investigations revealed Line 9 had at least 35 significant spills. Enbridge told regional councillors that corrosive tar sands would be a small percentage of products shipped in the line, while they seek to fill the line with dilbit. Finally, I'll close with the comment that if Canadians are serious about fighting climate change and honoring our treaty responsibilities with the Indigenous nations across the land, we must do more than new rules for the NEB hearings. We need systemic change. I hold that if we are demanding new rules for the NEB's review of the Kinder Morgan and Energy East pipeline projects, then we can't let the Line 9 decision stand, and we need to build support and stand in solidarity with those leading the ongoing act of resistance to fossil fuel infrastructure, such as pipelines, petrochemical facilities, and tar sands and fracking developments. No Line 9, thanks for coming out.
Thanks so much, Dan. I just wanted to let everyone know who's here and who's interested that there will be a screening of One River, Many Relations. It's the struggle of the original people in the Athabasca story of the struggle of the Athabasca tar sands and the people that are battling very hard there to deal with the impacts. And that's going to be happening at the Bricker Academic Building at Wilfrid Laurier, room 102 at 4:15. And I have to get up there, so we're going to have to get things going. But Maingun Henry is going to be up there. He had some things he had to take care of earlier today, but he'll be there to introduce the film and to talk to everyone afterwards. So to get filled in more with Line 9 and the Chippewas of the Thames battle and what we can do in terms of solidarity with the original people, come and show up to that at 4:15. Now to sort of close this off, I'd like to introduce Amy Smoke. Amy, you know, just was recently at a talk with Amy and John Ralston Saul, and John Ralston Saul talked about a conversation that
he'd had with Amy, and it had to do with pressure, you know, and the need to keep up the pressure. And we know that that is the only way that we are going to get this government to keep its promises. So let's keep up the pressure, and let's hear from Amy Smoke.
Nyawa, Ani, Sego, Awesno de Kwe, Indishnakosh, Mujike Dodam, Six Nations, Dunjuba, Kitchener Ondayam. My name is Amy Smoke. I'm the president of the Aboriginal Student Association at the University of Waterloo. But really what I wanted to talk about is the role of women in general. Women are connected to our land in a very evident way. We are all creators. We create life. Mother Earth creates everything that we need to sustain us. As do women. Women create other human beings. We sustain them. We carry on future generations. And as an Indigenous person, my connection to the land is like very evident to me. The more that we kill our mother, the more that she will kill us. And this is not really an Indigenous issue all the time. This is a human being issue. We do all share the land. Treated to Indigenous people, our communities are left to deal with the messes that human beings are creating. The government that we've recently put in place has made so many wonderful promises to us, and I think that it's important that we keep talking. We can't just be complacent. We can't let him keep making promises and then doing different things. Our actions here, our actions like Rachel running the Line 9, rallies, all of the support that people are doing across Canada are really what we need to keep doing. We need to keep the pressure on the government. They can make so many promises to us. They don't keep doing what they say they're going to do. Or they say they're going to do one thing and do something completely different. Expanding tar sands will kill us eventually. Reconstructing pipelines will eventually kill us. This is not something we can let go unchecked. Violations of promises and treaty rights is not something we can let go unchecked every time. I think it's important that women in particular stand up and speak. We have strong voices. Like I said, we carry on our existence. And Indigenous people have always been taught to think of the next seven generations. Most of the people in the government are thinking about themselves now, for now. We need to think about the seven generations ahead of us. Your children and my children are the ones that will be left to clean up this mess. And if we don't do something about it now, it's just going to get bigger and bigger. I don't really have any other like environmental knowledge I wish I could speak of, but I know Mayingan will update you more on the recent developments and Chippewas of the Thames fight against the government. Duty to consult is such a wonderful phrase, and they often don't. And it's part of the treaties, it's part of the promises made to Indigenous people. But all of our communities are in danger. Duty to consult should be everybody. It's not just with First Nations communities. We all have to live here together, and there's enough for everybody. But we're gonna kill her, and she will eventually turn on us and kill us. So I think it's important what you guys are doing to keep the support up. Keep talking. Like, we put the government into power. And we should be the ones then who have the responsibility to keep making sure they're doing what they're saying they're doing. That what they've promised us will actually happen and go forward. So I'd like to thank everyone though for putting this together. Again, what you guys are doing is the right step. Tell your friends, tell your family, put it on Facebook, tweet it all over the place. We need more support, we need more supporters, we need more allies. Aboriginal people know what we've been talking about for generations is true. And I think as we wake up to all of the First Nations issues, all of the support that we can get from allies as well as our own communities can only help. So I want to thank you again, and Nyawa to the people that put this together. Thank you. Nah.
I really don't have too much to add. In fact, I think Amy's articulated it very well, what we need to do. And that's, you know, we need to fight for ecological and social justice. And that's what we need to do. We need to ally with the original people. They're the ones who've had the knowledge. They're the ones who can actually make the stand. And right there is the key, as far as I'm concerned. And as far as probably a great many people are concerned, and more of us are waking up to that fact. We talked about keeping up the pressure. And so one thing that everyone can do is fire a tweet, send an email to MP Chagger. She's great. She's very, you know, open. She wants to listen. She wants to be a good MP for us. And she is on our side, but she needs to be pushed a little bit. To close this off, I like to invite our women singers up again.
So the song we're going to sing right now then is, in keeping with the theme of my little talk, is the Strong Woman song.
noline9wr.ca for more information about the Line 9 pipeline, and gofundme.com/chippewas to help with legal costs in the battle to stop Line 9.